Yellow Jackets may be over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, doing a deep dive into each and every episode of Season 2. If you want to make sure you don't miss a single podcast, be sure to subscribe at postshowrecaps.com/yellowjackets or search Yellow Jackets in your podcatcher of choice. If you want ad-free versions of all these podcasts, become a patron at postshowrecaps.com/patreon. I am Jess Sterling, and I am here with my co-host, my friend, my Roman, and my countrywoman, Marissa Garza. Marissa, how are you?
Big day for Romans here on PSR. I'm doing well, Jess. Thanks so much.
I'm so excited. If you didn't hear, we did like a little bit of a preview pod where we did some kind of like speculation, some predictions, some theorizing on what season two of Yellow Jackets would entail. And now we are here to break down the premiere for you. But of course, this isn't the only Yellow Jackets podcast. Of course not. We have to come in strong with some Yellow Jackets coverage here at Pusher Recaps. So starting off every week, we will have the early buzz. That will have me, Josh, and Grace. That will be coming out on Fridays. As we all know, Showtime releases these episodes online earlier on Fridays. So check that out then. Then we will be back with Marissa and myself for the deep dives every Sunday evening after the show premieres on Showtime proper. And then later in the week, Josh and LaTanya Starks are going to be breaking down Succession versus Yellow Jackets, pitting them head to head every week. So plenty of coverage. And of course, if you want to hear your feedback heard, read, theorized about, you could send it in pusherrecaps.com/buzzbuzzbuzz. That will get you a direct line to us to discuss your feedback and your speculations on what the heck is going out in the Canadian wilderness. Marissa, this was a wild premiere.
It was good to see everyone, though. I think it was weird because I was like, oh, hello, people that, you know, we haven't seen do new things in a while.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting the ending of this one. I mean, I was, no. But I wasn't. Also, you know, it's back. Like, it's just back and the vibe is back. Everything's good. So I got sucked back in.
Right away. What is your I already talked a little bit about my overall thoughts when I talked with Grace, but overall thoughts on the premiere of season two. Did you love it? Did you hate it? Somewhere in between?
I think I'm on the love it side. I think it like set up a lot of good things going forward. I am a little confused as to why there are more people than the adding of the people. There are some things that like
some red coats, right? Red shirts.
Like, there are so many things that, you know, with a show like this, you need to pay attention to that it's hard to ignore sometimes those type of things. But overall, I mean, also the music this episode, stellar. So it really got me back in the vibe and I was here for it. So
yes,
we'll see if it lives up to the hype through the rest of the season. I don't think they're going to let us down.
I don't think so. I have a feeling they're really going to kick it off this. Like, we already kicked it off so hard with this episode that I think that the episodes are just going to get better and better as the season goes on.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about this title, because it is not something that Grace and I really talked about, that the name of the episode is Friends, Romans, Countrymen. It comes from a Shakespeare quote from Julius Caesar, where it is, Friends, Romans, Countrymen, lend me your ears.
Yeah, I remember another cinema moment with this line was in Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Robin Hood is like, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. And they all like take their ears and throw it at him. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, no.
I didn't even realize what the title was until afterwards when I don't like necessarily always look at the titles of the episodes before I hit play.
Yeah.
And once I had looked it up, I was like, oh, that is so smart. Look at you, Yellow Jackets. they're telling you right out the gate, right? Like, yikers. So that happened. Obviously, that is the biggest scene. But of course, we're going to have to wait until all the way at the end of the episode to chat about that. So without further ado, I think we should dive into our deep dive and take this beat by beat.
I'm ready.
We start off 2 months later in 1996. We hear the song 17 by Sharon Van Etten playing. And all the Yellow Jackets are sleeping in the cabin in a snow-covered forest. They're all covered in furs of animals. You could tell some time has passed. They're needing to keep warm. Nat and Travis are gearing up to go out into the cold. Lottie has some tea for them that she puts a drop of her blood into. and she uses sage on them, rubs something on their palms. Nat seems a little suspicious about it, or at least not a full believer. But Lottie says, you keep coming back alive, so something must be working. And they both drink the tea. Travis thanks Lottie. And then as they're leaving, Lottie draws the symbol on a foggy window. Mm-hmm. Marissa, what do you make of this scene?
First of all I could think of was like bloodborne pathogens.
Of course.
I was like, but again, I have not been abandoned in the Canadian wilderness, so I don't know if I would have drank that mm-hmm. or not. I do know when it comes to, I did see some conversation from Reddit about this, and like it could be possible imagery in terms of the Christian religion with like
body of Christ
the blood of Christ as well is like yes. taken at the Eucharist, I think. So that is something I'm interested to see if we get more touchstones like throughout the rest of the series. At this point I just was like, why, what, okay. Like, okay, let's go, you know. I mean, their minds are at a point where this makes sense.
Yeah. And something that I do want to pay attention to is that between this and more scenes we'll see later, it does seem like Travis and Lottie at the very least seem to be on more similar pages. And now we have a very clear divide of like Nat and Lottie, like they're at odds. And so that is something I'm going to be tracking, whether or not Travis may have joined Lottie's cult at some point, I think is something that is sticking in the back of my mind. And I mean, Lottie being the one to draw the symbol on the window, again, not surprising. It seems like she's the one who invests the most in the symbol. She's the one whose cults are wearing the symbol in the future. But something to certainly keep an eye on as they wander out into the blizzard to both look for Javi, who is still missing, and also in search of some food. And we flash
like cartography, like continue building. Yes,
mapping the wilderness. Sorry, island. I'm going to do that a million times with Lost on the Brain, you know. And then we get a timeline that we haven't yet seen, 1998, where this is the girls being rescued. Now, I looked, and you did too, so if we missed anybody, please certainly reach out and let us know. It can be kind of tough when they have like hats and sweatshirts on and everything. Well,
the camera was flipping a lot too. Like, it was going a bunch of different places.
Yeah, so we confirmed saw Shauna, Van, Lottie, Misty, and Thaisa all being rescued. The paparazzi is going mad, and everybody's like, they're all trying to photograph them. Misty seems to be happy as a pig in mud about all of this. But that's not all we get from 1998. We also have the scene where Lottie's parents are saying, we don't know what to do with her, it's been 2 months. She wanders around the house at odd hours of the night. She is, shock therapy is used on Lottie. And then we scooch even further in the future to Lottie, whose hair looks to be quite a bit shorter. She has a roommate. It looks like she may be institutionalized in some way. She does her hand on the heart method of calming down her roommate and saying, don't worry, they can make you the better the same way they helped me. So this is fascinating, Marissa, because this is the first time we're seeing anything in this in a timeline where the girls have been rescued, but they're not yet adults.
Yeah, it's like the in-between.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting that she says they can help you like they helped me. So I guess she's thinking that this therapy actually did have an impact on her. And that makes me wonder what her cult is like. Mm-hmm. Like, is she incorporating this therapy in the cult? How
like the electroshock therapy?
Yeah. Like, what is the help that was, because we don't see, like, we just see the procedure and then she's okay. So I don't know, like, the in between, right, what happened there, but she definitely seems like someone that like looks in her environment for whatever can help her and latches onto it. Like she's in the wilderness. Okay, there's a symbol. That's something that I can latch onto. Right. That's something I can make sense out of. Okay, I'm in this institution. This therapy helped me, and then I can use it to help other people.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we know from season one that she was on medication to help with schizophrenia, and she runs out in the wilderness. And so it's interesting to me that then, like, she gets home and I'm wondering, well, did they get her more medication? Did they put her back on some medication? Not that that would alleviate the trauma and PTSD of being stranded in the wilderness for 19 months. But it's fascinating to see kind of what her parents choose to to do with Lottie. And she seems, when we do see her in 1998, she seems almost like numb, right? When she is sitting in the chair in between them. And we know she's an only child, at least from what we've gathered on the show. And her family has a significant amount of wealth as well. So something to keep in mind there.
Yep, indeed.
Then we're sticking with Lottie into the present day, which was really exciting. I was wondering how long we were going to have to wait to get this big reveal of future Lottie. We knew, of course, that we would see an adult version of Lottie based on like casting rumors and all of that. But it was fun to actually get to see her. She is the head of a cult. She says only one person can give you what you're looking for, you, your most authentic self. That's why you're here, so I can introduce you, the primal elemental self, and there is nothing more painful than hiding that self. And now, Marissa, I don't know about you, but alarm bells were going off in my head of like, it sounds to me like she is speaking about Thaisa's altered self, like her, I've been calling it her id.
Yeah.
It really sounds like she is speaking to that part of yourself.
Yes. It also reminded me of in our current world, there is a lot of controversy around a woman named Teal Swan who is like a cult leader that has similar messaging and things like that. So it's interesting to see that in this environment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what does the primal elemental self mean? And if a person doesn't know what that means, they will make it mean whatever they think it means.
Yes. So this is fascinating. She's speaking to this massive cult. Everyone seems to be wearing purple. So we'll see later, they all have necklaces that have the symbol on them. So truly just very fascinating. Simone Kessel is the one playing adult Lottie here. She's new to the cast. And then we flash quickly back to 1998, where Lottie just turns around as she's boarding the plane and just screams at the press.
I think it'll be really interesting to have adult Lottie in this story now, because we can kind of get more of her insight and more of her story in terms of what happened to her along the way and how did she get to here? Because we have like very distinct, many different distinct reactions from her in this episode. We have the, I can heal you. We have the scream, and then we have the, you can heal yourself. So I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. We get her intro song. They did make some changes. Obviously, they're going to be including some new actresses in the mix here. But I did notice they have some like playing cards present. Mm-hmm. We do see the Eyeless Man in the intro. So some changes to note. I mean, I watched it every time I've watched the episode at this point. I don't notice anything like off the bat that is like important to this episode at the very least, but something I'm trying to keep an eye on and be better about, like looking for theories within the intro song, you know?
Yeah. There, I don't think there's any mistakes on placement on the show.
Mm-hmm. So we're back in the present day. We're in Misty's basement, and Misty is helping Shauna practice an interrogation with the police. It's just like, just I'm so happy to have Christina Ricci back on my television screen. Mm-hmm. Her saying like, no, you say I want my lawyer, look, it's on the cookie.
I also loved the I made Hawaiian 5-0 punch, but it's the same, and I can give you a Tupperware container so you can have a punch kit, like
with a ladle, as if people don't have ladles at home for punch. This is very funny. She seems, I feel like Misty is relatable in certain ways. Like, yes, we all know Misty is a bit of a monster, but at the same point in time, right, like she's so upset Thaisa and Nat have been no shows. Of course, she doesn't know at the time that Nat was kidnapped, but she just feels like really let down that they didn't come to her little soiree, her get together.
She just wants to be a good hostess, you know. Mm-hmm. She wants people to come to the party.
Yeah, but and she desperately feels like they missed something. Yeah. So she's questioning Shauna of like, did you get rid of all of Adam's stuff? What about the journals? And Shauna says yes, but we know she is not telling the truth here.
Well, she hesitates the first time, and that's when I was like, you did not. Like,
yeah.
Oh no.
For as like dark and stormy of a character Shauna is, she's like a pretty bad liar most of the time.
Indeed.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just all over her face that she's lying. I'm like, Shauna, you got to get better at this if you're going to try to get away with murder. Like, literally. Then we're at the dog shelter where Thaisa is going to, this is like a terrible idea, Marissa.
This was horrible.
She's like, I'm just going to replace Biscuit. Sure. Steve the Yorkie. He looks good. She doesn't even interact with any of the dogs before she's like, eh, that one will do, I guess.
Yeah. She's like, give me Steve.
Yeah. What a name. What a name for a Yorkie, Steve. Not high on my list of dog names, I don't think. But the worker that is there says, oh, I voted for you. I'm so happy to vote for, quote unquote, the real thing.
Mm.
Which obviously is very funny, knowing that there's a lot of skeletons in Thaisa's closet that she is not revealing.
Literal ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so she gets a call from her campaign manager saying, like, oh, we're going to need to do this to get you reelected. But she hasn't even, like, gotten into office yet. We're picking up pretty much exactly where we left off in modern times.
Yeah.
So no time has passed at this point. Back in Misty's basement, she is hanging out on her Citizen Detective subreddit. And she notices that someone is looking into Adam's disappearance. He's doing this whole, like, Telegram bit. He does seem a bit like Misty, you know, where he's, like, diving deep into this. And he does notice that, like, oh, the guy that Adam had made charges for a fancy restaurant, lingerie. I think there's something about a mystery lady friend. To which Misty so aggressively downvotes.
She's like, no. Down. I thought was interesting, and I don't know just if this means it has any significance, but her, like, was her username African Gray?
Yes. The bird, Caligula. The bird.
Yeah. That's yep. Right. Okay.
Yep. So yeah, this is very fun. I mean, anybody who has seen any of the casting of the show has watched literally a single trailer or promo or recognizes the voice,
yeah.
Knows who this is and knows he's going to play a bigger part in the season. And you know what? I have to say, Marissa, of the things that, like, not that it didn't work for me, but I would say I missed, was, like, I really loved Misty and Nat and the way they played off of each other in season one. And so I just missed Misty having, like, a sparring partner, if you will, you know.
I think it'll be interesting having, like, I'm assuming that this Elijah Wood character is, like, Misty squared. Like, it'll be like, yeah. Like two Misties, so it'll be
two peas in a pod, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see them interact with Nat, because I have to believe that at some point Misty and Nat will be reunited in some way, and it'll be fun, yeah, if that time is also with this fellow citizen detective.
I have a feeling that, like, people really loved the Misty and Nat meetup with the random other guy from her Citizen Detective group in season one. And they were like, how can we play with that more and give Misty someone equally as unhinged to play off of? And I'm really excited about that. I can't wait for that, just because I think Misty needs someone to bounce off of a little bit. Just to have a straight man, if you will. Although, who knows if that's what her sparring partner yeah. will be in this season.
Well, and also I think, like, a character like this will challenge Misty to look at herself and be kind of like a mirror. And how will that change this character is really yeah. interesting to me.
Yeah. So then we're in Shauna's house. And, okay, Callie and her boyfriend Kyle are watching. I mean, anybody who watches reality TV is a part of, like, Rob Has a Podcast, right? Knows the challenge. They're watching a very old episode of the challenge. I was not expecting this to see this on my TV screen, Marissa.
The challenge has been around since Road World Real World's challenge. Like, it has been there. So it was so fun as someone who was a teenager during this time to see this happening.
Yeah.
I was like, I am you. This was me.
This is wild. Shauna returns home. Callie is just like, oh, Kyle, you should probably go. I have homework to do. Mm-hmm. And Callie is still, her and Shauna are still not getting along. She suspects that Shauna had something to do with Adam. And so she brings it up again to Shauna of, did you tell Dad? And when Shauna tells Callie that she told Jeff about Adam, she's like, how could you do that? And she stomps out. This feels like very typical teenage behavior to me.
Yeah, I mean, she even before that goes, like, maybe Kyle just disappear. Like, Adam. Like, yeah. She's on to something. She's on to her.
Yeah, it seems like season one was the who is Adam? What, you know, what is his importance? It feels more like season two is going to deal with the question of are Shauna and Jeff going to get caught, and is it possibly going to be because of their daughter?
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to follow. I would say of all of the, I mean, we've only seen one episode, but of the storylines that are least intriguing to me, I certainly would say the, are they going to find out if Adam or who killed Adam? I think that is on the lower scale for me of like what I care about on the show.
Yeah, I think we know, and that's enough to know.
Yeah, exactly. So back in 1996, we're in the creepy meat shed out in the wilderness. Shauna is playing MASH with Jackie. And I don't know about you, but I was like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I was like, no.
I was like, did we go into another universe? Is this a sideways? Did we go sideways? What's happening?
Yeah. Turns out that she's playing with dead Jackie. And she's playing MASH, and apparently Shauna is going to have an apartment in New Jersey with and she's a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. She's married to Jeff, and she has $1 million.
So didn't happen, but that's okay.
Yeah. But we all played MASH. This is one of my favorite things about the show, Marissa, is just the relatability of like being a kid who grew up in the 90s and watching a teenager play MASH in a creepy shed. Creepy shed part, but the rest of it is very relatable.
I played many a MASH, and that's what I think is also very, at least for me, very powerful about the casting of the show, is because some of these actresses were also actresses at the time that this was happening. So it just like automatically transports me back to 1996.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's especially funny because when I played MASH with my friends, the way we always did it is like the person who was going to be the subject of the MASH game, mm-hmm. Got to choose three options. Mm-hmm. So you'd get to choose like three places you wanted to live. And then the person who was writing it down got to throw in a secret fourth option. And it was always like the worst. So if you got to do, oh, what car are you going to drive? It would be like, ugh, you have to drive a skateboard. Like it would never be anything good. Oh, your house is going to be pukey green.
My favorite thing about MASH is strangely like the counter, like just making the spiral and then like having someone say stop. I thought that was always like super creative. I was like, it's almost like rolling a die, but
we did the tally marks.
Oh, you did the tally
marks until someone tells you to stop.
Interesting. Yeah. We did the spiral and then counting the lines.
Yeah. But unfortunately, Jackie is actually still dead. And Shauna's having a conversation with her dead body.
I mean, I'm thankful that she's still, like, at least like that part is still there. Like, I was like, okay, I'm not glad she's gone. I'm not glad that Shauna's also like diving headfirst into this fantasy that she's still alive. But I am glad the show kept Jackie dead, because I think that's more interesting than like an alternate reality where Jackie's alive.
We certainly don't need that. And I'm so happy that we're getting to see Ella Purnell back on the show as Jackie, because I really loved her in season one, and I'm happy we're getting more content from her. So meanwhile, in the cabin, Van and Thaisa are playing paper football. We see a cut on Van's wrist, and it is because we find out that they have been tying a rope to each other and like tying their wrists together to keep Thaisa from sleepwalking, which is a good strategy. I'm wondering if it's better though to tie it around your ankle or something, like over top of like a sock, so it's not rubbing directly on the skin.
I guess they don't have like another object to
tie her to something heavy.
not a person.
Tie her to, I guess they don't have like radiators, right?
Heat. Yeah, or something that would like make enough noise that if she was sleepwalking, someone else could wake up. Yeah. But, you know, resources are limited. And, you know, it's Van and Thaisa, so.
Yeah. And they're still very cutesy together. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy to see that, because it's been 2 months that Van is no longer wearing like the face mask, the half mask on her face. We do see a very noticeable scar, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy that it wasn't a continued storyline of like, oh, I'm still feeling really insecure about this. I'm happy she's just happy to let her face get some fresh air and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it shows that she's like comfortable with that too.
So I did love, I think it's Mari who says, where's Shauna? She's supposed to be getting the meat. Everyone knows she's hanging out with dead ass Jackie.
It was pretty good.
And this is where, like you said before, Marissa, we have three new randos. They seem to be like JV squad. We have three girls, one of which is Crystal. She's the most notable, who just simply will not stop humming. And I'm like, listen, if you're going to bring in new people, like, whatever, but don't make one of them someone that doesn't stop singing, because we would have heard her.
Fair point. I wonder if she's there, though, to show us like Misty in a friendship. Like maybe this Crystal is like the parallel to whoever Elijah Wood is going to be in.
That could be. And like how a friendship can go wrong, probably.
Yeah.
My husband is theorizing that the, not Crystal, but the girl who yelled at her to stop singing is Pit Girl.
Because
like, realistically, it could be. Yeah. I mean, we know it's someone with dark hair, and I would imagine it's someone who is fairly easy to kick off the show without too much muss or fuss.
Fair point.
So back in the shed, Jackie and Shauna have this conversation about how Shauna and Jeff began. And we find out they were at this party. The cops showed up. And so Jeff and Shauna ended up together in the woods. And it was right after Jackie and Jeff had a big fight. And Jackie had broken up with Jeff. She said she wasn't sure if she wanted to be with him. However, the Jackie ghost voice of Jackie says, no, he broke up with me because he wasn't sure how much longer he could be with someone who didn't have sex with him. So Marissa, I'm going to throw this to you. What does this mean? Is this just Shauna making up excuses to make herself feel bad about what she did?
Probably. I mean, because she's essentially having this conversation with herself, right? Like, she's not like, this isn't, I mean, unless this show is super supernatural and we do have, you know, which is yet to be seen. So right now we just really have to assume she's talking to herself. Shauna does like to make herself feel bad. Like, unfortunately, that's her go-to coping mechanism. And I mean, I don't see any other possibility. Do you?
No, I think this is something she's telling herself to make herself feel worse about the entire situation, right? Because then she goes on even further when Jackie says, oh, well, did Jeff kiss you first? And we find out, no, Shauna was the one who made the first move.
Yeah.
And this is, it's really a way to make her feel worse about what she did to her friend who is now no longer with her. And I think it's further proof, and we'll get to even more later. I'm still on hardcore watching out for like this Jackie Shauna potential romance type of situation. Like, Shauna loves Jackie so much that she wants to literally absorb consume her, right? Shauna loves Jackie so much she wants to be Jackie. She wants to take Jeff. It feels right to me that's where we're going with this. But
I think it's an interesting conversation, because I think the question that is asked there is like, what is love? Is love that type of all-consuming, all obsessive, all like idolizing type of thing? Or is love, can love be something different? Can it be something more gentle? And maybe Shauna's just like trying to find out what love means to her along the way.
So Shauna gets upset at Jackie, shoves her, the dead body that is. Her ear comes off. Shauna picks it up and it's like, holds it up to Jackie's head as if it's going to reattach. And then she puts it in her pocket.
Okay, what do we think the motivations are here? Do we think it's because she always wants to keep a piece of Jackie with her? Do we think it's because she doesn't want anyone to find the ear? What is the purpose of putting the ear in the pocket?
I think it starts out as, I don't know what to do with this and I don't want anybody else to find it. I think it starts out innocent enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it turns into something else the moment we see her holding it in her hand in the attic of the cabin. I don't think she had, I mean, it's not like she chopped off the ear to carry it around, you know?
I will say it was a pretty clean break.
It was. 2-month-old dead body frozen in the woods. Easy to break an ear off, apparently. Yeah. So back in the cabin, Shauna says she had to cut down on rations again. There isn't much left. I'm assuming this is part of the bear.
Did you also think, though, that, like, it could have been part of Jackie? Like,
I think everything, I've seen this theory everywhere, anywhere, all over the place of, like, Shauna is going to be secretly feeding them Jackie and not tell them.
I thought because she had, like, a piece of, like, I wonder if she had the ear and was like, oh, food. And then, like, I had to cut down rations. Here's some of Jackie. You know, like,
I think it's going to dawn on her next episode after she's consumed the ear and been like, well, I didn't die.
It's not really a nutritional part of the body.
It's cartilage, right? Yeah. I think it's bound to happen because knowing that Jackie is the one responsible for divvying up rations gives her a lot of power in terms of potentially sneaking a different sort of meat into a different sort of protein into the meals. So back in the present day, we are in Shauna's closet. And she is going through her safe. She pulls out a drawing of herself that Adam had drawn for her, his license, which she apparently still has, and a set of keys that were Adam's. I did notice on the one key, which turns out to be his art studio key, the one side was colored blue and yellow, which are Yellow Jacket's colors.
Mm-hmm. I was amazed at the amount of personal property this woman had on Adam. Like, to a certain extent, because, I mean, Shauna knows what to do in the situation. But however, like, she just, like, had it there in her safe, like, this whole man's life. She definitely didn't take everything, Misty. She didn't take care of everything.
Nope. So she calls Jeff. And does he answer, like, McDonald's chicken nugget department?
Yeah. She's like, did you say chicken nugget department? It's like, yeah, because I'm selling 6 pieces all day.
He is so proud of himself. He is thriving in his furniture store, unlike last season, which is fascinating. It's very fun. I did see a theory online on Reddit from I Saw Your Face in June. Noticed that Jeff was able to sell a ton of furniture that day. Maybe it was because Shauna killed Adam and it was seen as a sacrifice. And that's why their family is starting to get lucky. The wilderness provides when blood is spilled.
So, but that didn't happen in the wilderness. But
it didn't happen in the wilderness.
But what is Shauna, the wilderness? Yeah.
Like, yeah. You
know, that's a question. I'm like, obviously some sort of spiritual thing would have to happen in the wilderness to bring that energy to this time.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering is it, I think if that's correct, we're definitely leaning a more supernatural route. And I want to know how much is it that it matters that it's Shauna versus, because I truly, and I know people are still speculating about it, I don't think Adam is anybody. I think Adam is just a guy and he was killed by mistake. So I don't know that, like, if him dying is to do with Shauna, or if him dying is like, oh, well, he is so-and-so and this person is super important to the story of Yellow Jackets.
I think it was more of the fact that Shauna killed someone, and I wonder, I know we were talking about this a little bit in the last episode, but, like, I wonder if that comes with, like, the power of being the Antler Queen. Like, if Shauna is the Antler Queen instead of Lottie, does that, like, are these basically, like, two supernatural powers, like, balancing each other out? How does this play into things? Because if she has the supernatural power and she kills someone, it might not be the wilderness. It might just be the fact that the Antler Queen did this.
Yes, and I can't wait to talk more about the Antler Queen theories because my mind is a buzzing all about that. But first, so Shauna tells Jeff, well, Adam had an art studio. I've never been there, but I think we need to go there. After she looks at the photo of her, it's like, oh my God, how much more did he draw me?
Yeah.
Thaisa brings Steve to meet Sammy. I want to ask you, because I noticed something, especially after watching the episode three different times, like a psychopath. Is it like just me?
Dedicated podcaster.
AKA a dedicated podcaster. Is it just me, or are Thaisa's eyes looking red? Like, they look different than last season, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she also, like, at least what I noticed is that her personality, it's very, like, much more cold than it was before. I know at the end of the season one, there was that moment where she had that little smirk. Like,
yes,
that she's up to something, or like,
where we were wondering if the other personality or other part of her was coming through.
Yeah.
I'm also starting to wonder if those if we're gonna start seeing that part of her join in with the normal everyday Thaisa and blend mm-hmm. together more, rather than you're up now, okay, now we're switching positions, now you're up. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, if you've watched season four of You, this is also very applicable. But yeah, I mean, I think it shows like an evolution of that side of her as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah,
or a like depletion of energy from the side of her that is not the id side, that's like letting that part take over.
Yeah, the more stress she's under, the more overworked she is, the less mm-hmm. energy she has to suppress that side of her, I think is possible.
Yep.
So Simone cuts her off. She yells at Thaisa to stay away from Sammy. She says, I found that thing in the basement. You're not well. If you don't get real help, you'll never see Sammy again. And if you don't step down from office and seek treatment, I'll have no choice but to go to the press.
She's not messing around.
No, although part of me is like, go to the police. I know we don't always trust the police.
We don't go to the police, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I would be very scared if I saw my dog's head and heart on a shrine yep. in my basement mm-hmm. with an eyeless, with my child's eyeless doll. And I mean,
and the symbol.
And there's no telling when Thaisa might just show up at school and say, hey, I'm taking Sammy. And it's his mom. So it's his guardian. They're going to let her take him unless Simone steps in. And but I think it would require police intervention, court intervention in order to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's kind of giving Thaisa a chance here, but I don't think it'll last very long.
I think it's only a matter of time. I mean, I think that even if Thaisa in her right mind stays away from Sammy, knowing she's not in the right place to deal with him and be a mother right now, I don't think the id version of Thaisa believes that or is willing to stay away from her son.
Yeah, because I think the id has its own mission.
Exactly. So back in 1996, we're in the wilderness. Nat and Travis are walking through, oh my gosh, so much snow. And Travis thinks he sees Javi's buried body, but it is just a fox. He was like hallucinating. This was hard, Marissa, because they got me for a second. They really did.
Yeah. And I mean, that just shows like how much Travis misses Javi and how much he wants closure in the situation. Mm-hmm. And so the switch from, because we actually see like Javi's face, like frozen face.
Yeah.
And then it switches to a fox. That was a pretty stark contrast for me.
Yeah. And Nat says, maybe we should head back soon. It's going to get dark. Travis is saying we need to go farther and we need to get up earlier. And Nat says, yes, farther out makes sense if Javi is still alive. And of course, I think that the word if really does bother Travis. He's trying to be hopeful about this. Nat marks the tree with a red ribbon. I think these red ribbons are probably going to come back into play sometime, Marissa. I just feel like they're a marker of either that's how they get rescued or someone mm-hmm. else finds them. I think mm-hmm. they're bound to come back.
Yeah, they're breadcrumbs for sure.
Mm-hmm. In the present day, we're in the motel office. Misty barges in, wants to know where Nat went. The manager, one of the MVPs for me as far as side characters this episode.
Yeah, he was pretty great.
He's so unhelpful. He's like, listen, we don't have much going on in this motel, but we do have discretion.
I was like, more power to you, dude. Like,
yeah, he's reading his book. He has one of those stickers that says, like, smile, you're on camera. So Misty knows his social security number, and this scared me more than almost anything else in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, talking about personal data these days, like, who, like, Misty can find anything.
Mm-hmm. So watch out for Misty. She's like, you know what? I can filibuster all day. I will sit in this chair. I have a very large bladder and a really big book. I will sit here all day.
I will say the fact that it was a Nora Roberts book is like so everyone's moms was reading those books around that time.
Yeah, it's very funny. He finally is like, fine. She left in the middle of the night. She put cash on my desk and that was it. She was gone. I don't have anything else. Please leave.
She didn't have to sit very long at all. Like she just,
I would have at least, I mean, he has a book himself. What's she going to do? I feel like it would be worse. The bigger threat, in my opinion, is not saying you're just going to sit there and read your book. Say I'm going to pester you with questions for like hours and hours and hours until you give me information.
Or I'm going to read my book aloud to you. Oh,
no. That's worse. That's especially if it's a book that's bad. Yeah. That's so much worse. I'm going to read 50 Shades of Grey to you all afternoon. So we're in Adam's art studio. We see some drawings of some random people. I didn't recognize anybody. We didn't linger on any of them too long. I don't know that they're going to be important. But we do come upon a bunch of paintings and drawings of Shauna. She says, I never posed for him. And Jeff looks really upset here, Marissa.
Yeah, because it's like every possible version of Shauna. So even if she never posed for him, like this is maybe an indication of some emotional connection that was there enough for him to know, like all these different, we see everything from like her in a cafe and, or just her face to like a demon version of her or like a dying version of her. So we see a full range of who Shauna is. And maybe Jeff feels like, I don't even know these Shaunas.
Yeah, they're very intimate portrayals of Shauna, where even if she didn't pose for them, like you said, a lot of that reminds me of Titanic, of like, draw me like one of your French girls. Very, right? Very like sexy poses, very intimate shots. Very, we have like a portrait. That was my favorite one. The portrait, the black and white portrait on the table. But you're right. There is one photo that to me stood out in my mind because it looks like Shauna is crossed with either like a demon or a wolf. I even kind of saw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting to say the least. And Shauna says that the thought of Jeff with someone else scared her, but it also turned her on. Someone else's tongue in your mouth, their smell on you. I used to think that made me some kind of pervert. And Jeff asks, what do you think now? She says, I like being the way I am. And Marissa, to me, this is the strongest indicator that there was something else going on with Shauna and Jackie and her obsessiveness about Jeff also has to do with Jackie.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially like the someone else I thought of in this moment was Jackie. Like there's she was so deliberate in what she was saying, and it also speaks to like the amount of shame that she felt suppressing that part of her, that something happened with this relationship with Adam that made her feel comfortable enough to say these words, to be who she is. And so it's just really interesting.
Yeah. And then they have sex. Jeff, like Shauna puts her own hands behind her back and then Jeff like grabs them. And I felt like it was worth noting that the sex they have is Shauna is over the table. He cannot look at her face, but he is looking at paintings of her face, one of which is the demon-y wolf one.
Yeah, they come back to the one like a couple times during this scene. And I don't know, like this wasn't like make love sex. This was like revenge sex. Like this was anger sex.
This was, and I'm angry at you for cheating on me and being this intimate with somebody else. Yeah, I totally agree with you. This was not making love, as they like to say.
Yeah, and so I wonder what like Jeff choosing to look at that photo of Shauna, is that like the version of Shauna he wanted to see in that moment?
Is that true form?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much here. And so I will say, as much as the Adam portion of this storyline isn't really for me, I like this portion where we're, I sound creepy. I like this portion where we are diving into the psyche of Shauna and why she is the way she is. And how Jeff connects with all of that, because he's really entrenched in all of it, right? We found out last season he had read her journals years ago.
Yeah,
he knows everything she did. Whatever she wrote in those journals, which I imagine she was fairly explicit and candid in, he knows.
And so he stayed this is so there.
Fascinating. Yeah,
he stayed, and even if he didn't like express in words that he accepts Shauna for who she is, and we don't know if he really does, but he's. He's here still. So what is his motivation for that?
Yeah. So back in 1996, we're in the cabin. Shauna is called down for dinner, and she is just standing there holding Jackie's ear in her hand, like rubbing her finger on it. I said this in a recap podcast, Marissa. The early buzz really reminds me of a lucky rabbit's foot, the way she is just kind of stroking it.
Yes, which is why it was so surprising what she does with it later. I was like, oh, okay, cool. You're just like going to keep this around, you know.
She's very gentle with it, right? Yeah, like, yeah. Like petting it, like almost like, okay, almost like a caress, like you would do with someone's ear while it's still attached to their body.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. I can't wait to see like get more reasoning behind why she did what she did here.
Yeah. So Misty, we find out, is banned from touching the food.
Obviously.
She drew the 4 in the deck of cards, which I do think is going to be important. But she has to go get the water and she is upset about it. She said, I've done it the last couple of days, which makes me wonder if they're stacking the deck against Misty.
I wonder if the deck has to do with Pit Girl. I'm just thinking like off the top of my head.
I think it might. I think it might.
That person had to run. And
I think the deck of cards being in the intro and finding out they're using it to designate people for things that no one wants to do feels important to me, especially get to Lottie's cult later and the sacrifice that's happening.
Yep.
Feels very important. So Thaisa notices Shauna has been kind of off. She asks if she's okay. Worth noting, we kind of mentioned it a little bit, but Shauna looks real pregnant. Like, you know, she's probably been out there. I think the math we have kind of done is it's been at least 6 months. She looks to be in her third trimester at this point.
Yeah. She's close.
Mm-hmm. Back to present day. We're in the art studio and they, instead of, because they can't realistically bring all these paintings out with them, they take paint thinner and they just rub the faces off of the Shauna paintings, which seems a little sus to me, Marissa, like if the police were going to come around here.
Well, first of all, how much DNA of theirs is all over this room, given the activities that they had? So like, I was expecting when I saw like the paint thinner come out, I was like, oh, you're going to make a fire. Like you're going to
They were going to set the place on fire too.
This makes much more sense because then you're covering up all of the tracks, but they just kind of smooshed away the faces. And I'm like, this is going to come back. Like, this is not a Misty protocol situation.
Misty would have been like, no, what we do is we cut off the canvases and roll them up and take them with us. Shove them down your pants, put them in your purse. You can roll them up kind of tight, you know?
Or, like, just go get a bag. Like, no one's going to, like, you know?
Yeah, look not super suspicious, but it looks less suspicious than rubbed off faces on a painting.
Yes. And again, I think like their fingerprints are everywhere. Like it's just the scene of the crime.
There's a lot of DNA there,
exactly.
Marissa.
Exactly. Yeah.
So back at the motel room, Misty breaks into it and is just sitting there. In 1996, we're outside the cabin and we go back to Crystal here. She is singing The Glory of Love by Bette Midler, which is from Beaches. And Misty yells at her because she's upset. She has to get water. And we find out that Crystal and Misty have something in common, Marissa. Singing helps grease the skin.
Well, you know, it does. Like, scientific, like, in your body, when you sing, you activate the vagus nerve, which, like, helps you, like, relax. So, like, if you sing.
It does help you poo. Yeah.
If you sing, or if you play a musical instrument or do deep breathing, you're basically like activating the vagus nerve, which then activates your parathyroid. It's like a whole thing.
You're so smart, Marissa.
I would just watch a lot of YouTube.
So relatable. Although I don't watch YouTube, that makes me smarter at all.
But so there is some truth to that. But I like that they use that to bond.
Yeah, she's like, listen, I can teach you to sing, we can harmonize, because poor Crystal has been wanting to sing this whole time she's here, but everyone keeps telling her to shut up, which, I mean, why wouldn't you have like a karaoke night, right? Like, it had to be so boring there.
Exactly. Like, I'm like, okay, at least it's something new. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's new to us. Like, yeah. I don't know if she's singing the whole other time, but it's something
Misty does
do.
Get this look in her eyes of like, ooh, a friend, finally. Yeah. I just have a feeling it's going to go so poorly for Crystal.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. but I think it's really interesting to see how, you know, Misty, we're introduced to Misty on the plane as she has made relationships. Not, we haven't seen her make any new relationships.
Yep.
And so I do think that Crystal is going to give us some of that insight in terms of how she interacts with Misty and how Misty interacts with her.
And I think it's worth noting that in terms of the food chain, the pecking order, Misty seemed to us to be pretty much on the bottom, even if she had skills to provide, first aid skills, stuff like that. However, I think it's going to be interesting to see that seemingly Crystal is with the JV squad, so they're younger. So they would seemingly be lower on the food chain than Misty is. And I'm very interested to see how Misty treats someone who is below her.
Exactly.
I think that's going to be fascinating to see.
And what if Elijah Wood has more detective points than Misty? Oh my gosh.
Totally possible. So in the cabin, Nat tells Coach Ben they haven't found Javi or more food, but she has been mapping the wilderness. They pull out this cork board and they have covered 7 miles in either direction, not finding sign of game nor of Javi. And Coach kind of says, like, it's been 2 months. I don't think Javi's really there. And Nat says, no, I know, but Travis, you know, he can't. It's his brother. He can't give up hope. But this map seems important, Marissa.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, good on them. That's like a great idea. Like, I was like, let me file that one away in case I'm ever lost in the Canadian wilderness. Like, but also, like, where'd they get paper? But anywho.
Well, it was on like old school book homework. Right, they must have had some paper with them. Yeah. That somehow got saved.
Yeah, I think the map is going to come into play mainly because later on the episode we do get like that tree. Like, I think we're going to get like places that make sense in the environment.
What if we get like landmarks that build the symbol or something like that on the map? Yeah, I could see that. I mean, we've seen they did it before with the photos at Travis's death site, if you will. With candles, I think it's totally possible that you line all these papers up and there are specific pinpoints that make the symbol.
What if it's the ribbons?
Could be the ribbons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or it could be something more like the stump that we see later as a focal point, you know, somewhere they'd hide an idol on Survivor.
Exactly.
So back in the present day, Misty is sitting in the motel room crying. She's like, do not cry about this, Misty. Credit to Christina Ricci for making me feel so bad for Misty, who's kind of a monster.
Agreed. She does great work.
But she is a citizen detective, and she does notice signs of a break-in on the door and a camera facing the door.
Yeah. She's like, oh, something happened here.
Yeah, the one thing, though, I wonder is, I feel like 9 times out of 10 on these types of shows, maybe there are cameras, but they never work. Joey's just there for show. There's
especially
never anything
here.
On them.
There were so many. I used to work at a place where there was a fake camera, and I thought it was a real camera. It was like this whole thing. But I feel like the more like smile you're on camera, things you see, the less opportunity you'll have to actually have a camera available if you need it.
Yeah, usually the more rundown places are too, they're not investing in cameras, and at the very least it's probably like, oh, they write over each other every 12 hours. It like goes over the stuff that's already been recorded.
Yeah.
So who knows if this will actually lead anywhere. Do you want to make any guesses on like an over under on how many episodes until Misty and Nat are reunited in the present day?
I gotta say by episode 5.
Okay, I'll say by 4. I was feeling 4, like they wouldn't go too long without reuniting them.
I think there's like the Elijah Wood play, and then there's the getting back with Nat.
Yes. So back in the cabin, we're in a different cabin now. We're in the Colty cabin. Nat is struggling against these like medical grade restraints. I thought it was very like they looked like the type you would see in a hospital when someone is having an issue and needs to be tied down.
Much like the ones that Lottie in 1998 was in.
Exactly. So a girl wearing all purple comes in, a very young girl. She has food for Nat. And she's like, I'm not supposed to talk to you. We notice the symbol is on her necklace. And Nat is like, listen, just like free one hand. I still won't be able to get out, but I can eat. And immediately, Marissa, I was like, no, you cannot trust Nat. Don't let her. I mean, I wanted her to be let go. But to the girl, I'm like, girl, just do your job and get out of there.
Yeah. I was like, did this call training not cover how to care for like hostages, I guess? I don't know.
I mean, maybe they haven't had a ton of hostages.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, it was good on that. It was a good play.
Yeah, she gets her hand free so she can eat. Back at Shauna's house, we have Jeff sitting in the car. So relatable. Okay. Jeff has been one of those characters who I went from hating in season one to just him being this lovable doof. He's sitting in his car, picturing himself having sex with Shauna in the art studio, and he is blasting some Papa Roach, "Cut My Life into Pieces," Marissa.
This is my last resort. Yeah.
Suffocation. It's so excellent. And he's like slamming. We've all been there. We have all been there where we slam some hardcore music on in the car and just rock out.
Specifically to this song a couple of times. It's like such a good like anger song. I honestly was like I was scared that he was in the garage in the car. Like I didn't
Oh, with the
know.
carbon monoxide type situation. Yeah. Just seems like
But
the only
he
place
just
he can get some peace and quiet by himself.
that's true.
So they are burning the journals and Adam's license on the grill. And Jeff says, "Well, we'll have some Frankenbeets for dinner just to have an excuse for using the grill in November." They're so just doofy about this. They set the tree on fire. This is such a hot mess. And also, Marissa, like I said this on the recap podcast, the early buzz, but like, don't cook your food over
No,
hot plastic.
why would you eat a Frankfurter
Just
that
pretend.
was has gas fumes from plastic and like who knows what else?
It's all bad.
No,
It's all very
yeah,
bad.
that was my whole thing. I was like, don't eat it, don't eat it. That's worse to
Don't
me than the ear
than the ear.
sometimes.
I mean, in terms of the healthiness of it, probably. In Thais's basement, she's down there. She's smelling her wife's sweatshirt, and then she does find the shrine that she did. Poor little Stevie runs in, and we're all like, "Stevie, get out, run far away, get out of there, Stevie."
No, Stevie,
She says,
no.
"This was a mistake. I'm gonna do better by you," and we're all like, "No."
I was like, what was the mistake getting Steve? Like, what is the thing? And then also, then you know what you did if you know this was a mistake. So which one of you is talking here? You know, is it the Thai or the Issa?
That's what I'm saying. The Thai, this is okay. This is a good thing. We got to do Thai means Thaisa, and then Issa is her id. This is okay. We got to start this. Yes. Because even if Thai is like, "Stevie, I would never hurt you. You're adorable. You're so cute. We're going to be besties." Issa is like, chop off your head, rip out your heart.
Well, and for Issa, the mistake could be like leaving this here in the basement and getting found out. You
Exactly.
know, like what is the mistake we're talking about? Like maybe the mistake is not killing a dog. Maybe the
Yeah.
mistake is just how the dog, like how this all was left.
Yeah. And this to me gives me big vibes of because we saw in season one Van was willing to follow Lottie in terms of giving the heart up to the land. Issa feels like someone who would also be following along with this, right? Follow along with the cult-like behavior, even if Ty is not someone who would do that.
Well, and I think Issa's like the subconscious like manifestation of Thaisa, basically.
Yeah.
So maybe even if Thai wasn't able to process that in real time, what was happening, Issa was like all ears, for lack of a better
Exactly.
term.
Back at Shauna's house, they're having dinner. Jeff tries to make up a joke about what did the hot dog say to the bun. They're workshopping the joke. Callie has had enough. She's gonna go make herself a veggie burger, but Jeff stops her. He says, "Maybe old-fashioned dad stuff is my love language."
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah. He jumped up a little bit too quick, Jeff.
Well, and Shauna's like giving him the eyes, like,
Like, wouldn't you check to make sure it had all
Thank you.
burnt?
That was my whole thing. I was like, how did you not check this? Or at least like take the grill and
The
dump
grill, the
it.
grate off or whatever. Yeah. That's why I'm really, this is why this storyline doesn't necessarily work super well for me, because there's so many things that I can point out to be like, you should have done this, and it seems very obvious that someone would have done this, that they're not doing. So, back in 1996 in the cabin, Travis asks Nat how she knows that Javi is dead, and she says, "Well, it's been 2 months and it's been very, very cold." Travis has a panic attack. So Lottie comes over. She puts her hand on his chest in the same exact way that she did with the person in 1998 with her roommate. Mm-hmm. And he sees visions. So he sees a tree trunk different than the tree trunk that they donated the bear heart to, sacrificed the bear heart to in season one, up on a hill. And then he sees it again and is kind of surrounded by candles, very similar to the Lottie vision that Laura Lee had, where she was underground with all the candles. So my question to you, Marissa, is Lottie magical? Are we leaning supernatural? Or is she just a very empathetic person who is able to calm people down?
I wonder if it's both. I wonder if, like, she's able to just calm people down enough that, like, the forces of the universe are able to communicate with people. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a tough question because we do have, like, the schizophrenia factor coming in and not saying
but that. It's like, Travis having the vision is the problem. It's right, not Lottie.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, like, to your question in terms of magical, like, she's being led to do these things. And what is the force to do that? Is it her mental illness or is it supernatural? If it's supernatural, like when she's touching someone, that energy presumably would be transferred to the other person.
Right. Because it, to me, the whole hand on the heart thing feels a little similar to like the Leftovers where like, oh, I can hug your grief away type of thing.
I mean, but it is like a co-regulation, like, place, like,
and she
place.
Does say focus on your breathing out, and that is super helpful if you're having a panic attack.
Yep.
But I think the moment he starts to see visions, I'm like, something else is at play here, whether or not it is solely present in this area, in this wilderness area, or if it's something Lottie. Innate in Lottie. I do think there's something there.
Then do you think that because she used blood in the water before that like now that Travis
bonded them?
Yeah, I mean, nothing happened, we haven't seen anything like this happen with Nat yet,
but I don't think they have a close enough relationship,
right,
that happened. Exactly. I think you have to be open to it,
right and so is that's that a good like point. How she's creating her cults, is that how
she's giving her blood to them and tea and stuff? I like that point. I think that's something to keep an eye on, is anybody else drinking this sort of drinking the Kool-Aid, if you
exactly,
will.
Exactly.
Is there anything else there? Yeah, that's a really good point. So Travis gets an erection, which some people, I've seen some theories on like, oh, do Lottie and Travis have a relationship? And that is why Nat and Lottie are at odds in the future. And is that why Lottie knows more about Travis and, you know, says the thing to Nat in the end of the episode? I didn't really view it that way. I don't think like erections don't always have to be sexual, if that makes sense. So I didn't necessarily view it that way, but like, did you see anything there romance wise?
I didn't see anything like sexual, but I do think that there's a level of trust that Travis has with Lottie that is different than he has with other people. I don't know where that's going. I don't know what that signifies, but I think the erection itself was, he just had like a bunch of energy like come through him. And, you know, it is a biological function of humans. So.
And I do think there, like you're saying, there is a bond there now. Yeah. And Lottie says, your brother is alive. I know he is. And Nat brings her to the side and says, what do you think you're doing? You're giving Travis false hope. And Lottie says, there's no such thing as false hope. There's just hope. She says, I just said what I felt. This is tough. I'm with Nat in that you can't just say that to somebody, especially when you're doing this thing with the blood and the tea and the what is it, sage and all of that, making Travis think that you have a hand in keeping him and Nat safe is one thing, but to then extend that and be like, I know for sure your brother is alive, even if you do feel that way, I'm more side with Nat on giving someone false hope when maybe you shouldn't.
Well, especially in a situation like this where they have been lost in the wilderness for X amount of months and, you know, they are in a survival type of situation. Mm-hmm. Giving someone false hope can lead to very dangerous things. And so I think watching hope with Lottie and who else she gives hope to, you know, is mm-hmm. interesting, because we do kind of see that in the cult too. She's giving hope to these people. She's saying, I can help you.
Yes.
Like with the primal elemental you, like I am your key, the bridge to that experience. Mm-hmm. And so it's something she doesn't grow out of.
Yeah. She leans into it. Definitely.
Yeah.
So back in present day, we're still in the culty cabin. The young girl comes back in to tie Natalie back up. But Nat tricks her. She is already out of the other shackle, and she takes a fork and jabs her in the hand and then runs. And we see her on the cult compound.
This was so fun. Like, I didn't like the fork in the hand, but her like running around.
Well, of course, because the way she's running, Juliette Lewis, an icon, yes. Her body language is hysterical in this scene.
This seemed like so true to Juliette Lewis. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
like she's been doing this her whole life, escaping cults. Yes.
And just running through the woods. And I do love what happens next.
Yeah. Her. So back in 1996, we're in the cabin. Thaisa wakes Van up by trying to kiss her and then bites her lip so that mm-hmm. she bleeds. Mm-hmm. We figure out that this is not Ty, but this is Issa. Yeah. And Van says, I'm not scared of you. This isn't you. It's something that's happening to you, happening to us. And she writes, I love you on Thaisa's arm in blood. So this is like, it's very cute, but also terrifying.
That's pretty much the show, right? Like, oh, it's cute, it's fun, but also terrifying. Yeah. I feel like what's interesting about the statement, this isn't you, this is something that's happening to you, happening to us, is a big metaphor for their whole experience thus far. Mm-hmm. Like, even that's what trauma is. Trauma isn't you. Trauma is something that's happening to you, around you. But Van's, like, leaning into this is concerning to me. Like, I don't know if I would be that forgiving if someone bit my lip in the middle of the night. Like,
and made her bleed. Yes. Like, this is not just a tiny scratch. It's and not I understand a that
thing either.
Yes. And I understand that Van saying, you saved me from wolves, you know, like you were there for me. I'm not, this isn't gonna scare me away. But I think they could be taking steps to be more careful. Because I think like they need to be more cautious. And I will say, shout out to the actress, Jasmine Savoy Brown, because I felt like you could see in her eyes that mm-hmm. Issa was coming through. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So that mm-hmm. was interesting. And, I also think it's fascinating that as much as I think after season one, people were like, Lottie, Antler Queen, confirmed. I do think season two is doing a wonderful job just one episode in of kind of presenting us with other options as to who could be Antler Queen. Like, I mean, I can't just ignore the fact that Ty just literally bit on someone's lip to make them bleed.
Yeah.
You know, not that she was trying to eat the lip, maybe, but it's certainly a little bit more intense, a little yep. bit more, you know, hurtful, painful than other versions of Ty.
But yeah, and I could see that being something that she's not necessarily aware of mm-hmm. at the same time.
Back on the cult compound, Nat sees a ritual happening. So we have the cultists are all wearing all white, and they're playing instruments, and they have animal masks on. So very, very reminiscent of the very first scene we see in Yellow Jackets. Mm-hmm. A naked man gets saged, which again, Lottie saged someone earlier this episode. Mm-hmm. And then he is beginning to be buried alive by the cultists.
He seems happy about it.
He's sacrificing himself, it seems. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, okay, here I go into the thing.
Yeah. Again, this very much is going to give me the card vibes of like, okay, who's the sacrifice today or this mm-hmm. week or this month? This man is it. And Lottie shows up. She's wearing red and a white robe. And Nat immediately is just like, not having it. She tries to hit Lottie, but she with a stick, with a random stick, which again, Juliette Lewis, like she whacks a guy with it. And it was so funny to me.
She's like, the stick is out in front. She is not messing around. She's ready to go.
So she does stop, though, when Lottie says, I have a message for you from Travis. Which, gotta say, I was very intrigued.
Well, we also know that Lottie knows that you just, like, drop the name Travis and Nat's going to be like, what do you need? What do you want? Yeah. So I wonder if this is true. I wonder if it was just used to de-escalate the situation. Because she's in front of her cult people, so she can't like let. So I don't know. I mean, I hope it's a real message.
I hope so too. And also part of me isn't putting much stock in what the message will actually be.
Oh yeah. It could just be
like it could be Lottie being like saying Lottie things, you know, very like mystical type things rather than something true, hard facts that will help Nat in this time.
Yep, yep.
But you're right. And you bring up Travis, Nat is stopping in her tracks for sure.
Yeah.
We get a montage. Shauna is holding Jackie's ear in her hand. We see Nat and Travis visit the trunk that he saw in his vision up on the hill. It is kind of weird. It doesn't seem like there's like a ton of snow on it, unlike the rest of the forest.
Right.
I don't know. I'm thinking this definitely has something to do with Javi's whereabouts.
Agreed. Yeah.
So we'll get into that because I do have a Reddit theory that I want to dive into that is related to that. Callie finds Adam's license, which is burnt just so perfectly, just so we see his picture on his license.
So convenient.
Again, she also is like digging her hands in underneath the coals and everything. And I'm just like, how are her hands not black with soot? I know, I can't help but looking. I've seen this episode 3 times. All right. I'm going to notice these things.
But also, I mean, for as much thinking that Shauna and Jeff did, this is like, okay, even this is more careless to me than just wiping the faces off at the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So easy to dispose of that, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
So then, of course, we get the biggest headlining moment of the entire episode. Shauna looks at the ear and eats it.
Okay, but why?
I think it is very much the, if I consume her, I can be her. I can be closer to her. Mm. We can be closer together. I think it could be that. I know we have some feedback to go over saying something to do with her pregnancy could be certainly possible. But all of this to say, I think Shauna eating the ear really gives credence to the theory of Shauna being the antler queen. I think like her being the first to consume another human being is huge for the show, and her, especially her being the only one that we're aware of that is dealing with the rations of the meat
and has access to human remains.
Exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out that Shauna is actually Antler Queen. I also think in terms of Shauna being, I said this a little bit, I think, with Grace, where Yellow Jackets, right? You have a queen, you have a mother.
Yeah.
Literally, Shauna's about to be a mother. She is the queen bee. And if she is the first one to consume another human being, she is the first one to go to that dark place. So as much as Lottie seems like the chalk pick because she's a cult leader and she has all this mysticism surrounding her, she could be a red herring, or they could be working together. It could end up being that like they're just, it's one of those situations where you have two people that are so terrible for each other, but when they're locked in, it's they overtake everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or it's like one's the light side, one's the dark side. Like they're a dyad that has to like balance each other out.
Exactly. So that is our episode. Let's get into some feedback from the listeners. Marissa, do you want to read out Allie's feedback that she sent in?
First of all, thank you to everyone who submitted feedback. Always fun to get feedback. Allie has to say, I think Adam is a disciple of Lottie's cult. I think he met Shauna on purpose and had some sort of plan to do with something bad, and then she killed him. On top of that, I predict that Javi survived alongside Lottie and is a follower of hers. I think that him and Adam were in a relationship, and that when Shauna surprised Adam at his apartment, Javi was in the bathroom. Sorry, I'm reading this for the first time. So great, Allie. I think I think we'll get some Adam backstory slash explanation this season, or at least I hope we do. Thoughts, Jess?
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to. I think we might be done with the Adam storyline, at least as it concerns who Adam was. I think the only Adam stuff we're going to get forward is just the will they get caught kind of storyline.
Yeah, I think he's a good character to catalyst Shauna's story forward.
But I do love the idea of him and Javi being like in a relationship or something. Because I know people are obsessed with the fact that everyone thought Adam was Javi in season one. Yeah. And so I think it'd be very funny if him and Javi had a connection somewhere in the past. Because Javi and Shauna have a little bit of a connection, right? She gave him a journal. She gave him a paper out of a journal. He whittled her a wolf. Like, there could be something there.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I just was like, oh, what if he is in the bathroom? Like, that would have been great.
That would have been nuts, right? Anna sent in some feedback that it was super important, I thought, to hear from. She says, I have to say I'm a bit disappointed with the show's portrayal of electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, which made it look brutal and cruel, like torture even. In reality, the patient is put to sleep under general anesthesia. They do not lie there screaming. There are no violent convulsions thanks to muscle relaxants. This has been the basic practice since the 50s and 60s. I've seen the procedure done a number of times. It was very routine. The atmosphere in the room is safe and calm. Nothing scary, nothing traumatic. It's always unfortunate to see pop culture depicting mental health stuff in inaccurate ways that are likely to increase stigma and fear around them. ECT is a legitimate treatment and does not need to be feared.
Yeah, thank you so much for Anna for raising this point. I did do some research after this came in, and there's so many articles about how this does lead to the stigma of mental health. And so I found an article, which I'll post in the Discord, or maybe we can put it
in the show notes
later, from the National Institute of Health, that kind of just talks about this. I think that is, as we're exploring the show in general, this depiction of mental health question is a good one to keep an eye on, because when you mix mental health with things like the supernatural, it can be easy to dismiss mental health as a tangible, treatable, serious affliction that people have to deal with, as opposed to a supernatural thing, which is also dealt, but just in a different way. So it's something I'll be keeping my eyes on as we keep going forward in the season.
Exactly. Especially when it comes to Lottie, right?
Yeah.
Like that, it is, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of it. And so thank you so much to Anna for sending that in, because it is really important for shows to get these details right, because you're right. It is further stigmatizing mental health illnesses. Yeah, that was really intriguing, that scene with Lottie. And like, I'm very curious to see more of her story, which it does seem like we're going to be getting a lot of in season two. I felt like Lottie was a very slow build in season one. So I'm excited to see more of her.
Agreed.
What did we get from Chloe?
Chloe wrote in to say, I think we may be missing that Shauna is the antler queen. My thought process being that she is pregnant out there, and pregnancy can bring out some very distinct driven nature. German nature. Considering the intense cravings for food and primal need for protection of yourself and baby, I could see her doing what it takes to survive in that way. I also the time she appeared inclined to lick the blood from the bear off of her hand. I have been pregnant and did not experience pica. Thank you. Although I was made quite aware of it, aware of the possibility. I did experience intense hunger, and considering they were all starved for food, I thought she would be the clearest choice for who would, quotes, go there and eat a person first. Shauna is responsible for bringing meat rations in for everyone. And if she starts using her time out there, to go snacking? Eventually, they all find out and she tells them to follow her and eat or be eaten. I don't see the threat. I don't know if Shauna's going to threaten them.
No, I think it's going to be more sneaky, like she says. Like, what if she's, you know, she's maybe, I think it's less likely she'll be found out right away, and more likely that she will sneak feed them and get them on board with it. But I did love a lot of the points that Chloe brings up about the fact that Shauna is pregnant and how that might be impacting her drives, her food-driven tendencies and what you might eat. So very, very interesting. I'm just looking up what the So pica is an eating disorder in which a person eats things not usually considered food. And I know it is something that is like common in pregnant women. So interesting that that could be something that is affecting Shauna for sure.
And I mean, especially that, you know, we have to remember she's not receiving any prenatal care. She has no support system, really. And no one has been through pregnancy that she's, at least the people that she's around with. So she's just leaning on instinct. Yep. At this point,
Dana sent in some feedback. I noticed Christian symbology and Nat and Travis drinking God's blood and Shauna eating Jackie's ear. When people take communion at church, the bread wafer represents the body of Christ and the sip of wine or grape juice represents the blood of Christ. Christians are figuratively consuming Christ to be one with him. It appears that Yellow Jackets may be trying to soften the grotesque, horrific nature of cannibalism via the lens of faith and religion. Fascinating. Thank you for pointing that out. I think it could be both. I think it could be like softening the blow a little bit while also being we're talking about being one with Christ, him being a part of you. I think there's something to be said that it is Jackie that Shauna is consuming.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, as a kid going to church, I always was like, were they eating him? Like, I don't understand what's happening here. So it could also be making a comment on religion at the same time. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
She also said, with adult Lottie being introduced relatively early into a planned 5-season show, that is something the writers have said is that they're hoping to do 5 seasons. Obviously, we know they've gotten renewed for season 3 already, but we don't know if we're going to get a full 5. She is definitely not the big bad. I think she's more of a morally gray character in the same boat as adult version of Shauna, Thaisa, Misty, and Nat. The real villain is likely the supernatural force in the Canadian wilderness, perhaps the man in the cabin who Jackie saw as she was dying. Lottie equals Locke/Ben Linus. That means the ultimate big bad, whether it's cabin man or eyeless man who young Thaisa saw in the mirror, will be the show's smoke monster slash man in black. The core four who got introduced in season 1 is the Oceanic Six. So this is a Lost references for those who are not familiar. And of the core four, with adult Thaisa still so clearly affected by the malevolent force, she is the Saeed Jarrah. Finishing off the Oceanic Six mapping, I think Shauna is Jack, de facto leader. Misty is Hurley, fan fave. And Nat is Kate Austin, a badass.
Whew. I mean, I know we all miss Lost. But I hope, I do hope that the show deviates. I could totally see this mapping. This mapping totally makes sense, Dana. Like, I get it. I just hope that we get like a little bit different of a map.
Yeah, I viewed Lottie as an obvious John Locke. I always thought Thaisa would be the Jack Shepherd, but I'm thinking it's more Natalie since the way they're at odds the beginning of the season, and Nat is the one who is very... being more realistic, mapping the wilderness, saying that we can't give Travis false hope, because Thaisa, I think, is distracted with Van. And I think the Issa part of Thaisa is going to be leaning more towards Lottie than she would Nat, Ty is leaning more Nat. So that's going to be interesting. I do see a lot of these things mapping. And I think it's interesting that as Dana points out, maybe Lottie isn't the big bad. It's whatever is afflicting Lottie in the wilderness that is the big bad.
First of all, Canada. Like, I'll still come to the wilderness. Like, it's okay.
We love you, Canada.
Like, I do. I really do love Canada. So it'll be interesting to see if we get the answer to what the big bad is. Like, there may just be like, my answer will probably be trauma is the bad. Is the big bad.
Trauma's always the big bad.
We'll see what happens.
Are you ready to go down some Reddit theory, Reddit rabbit holes?
Yeah. What you got?
So my absolute favorite theory was one I found this morning posted by Just a Guy in Queens. Their theory is the symbol that we see is a crude map of an illegal mining operation. So the blood in the water that we saw in season 1 is actually mining runoff. So he said there's a super mine site in eastern British Columbia, which doesn't seem that far off. It would explain why it was so secretive. It would explain more about the symbol. If there are 3 false mine shafts, those are the lines. The line through the mountain to further hide the operations. In the original map theory, the hook at the bottom of the symbol represents the mine, but why would that symbol specifically be used instead of a more generic X? Well, the alchemical symbol for crystal, cinnabar crystals are, is that, like, it kind of looks like a hook. Mm-hmm. They say that refining cinnabar crystals to get them to liquid mercury gives them a very bright red liquid that could look like that bloody water. And symptoms of mercury poisoning are also called Mad Hatter syndrome. Gives you irritability, excitability, excessive shyness, insomnia. So it could give you, like, mental confusion, emotional disturbances. It could also give similar symptoms in animals, especially predators.
Then that means that capitalism is the big bad. We're getting there. We're getting there. We're getting and there.
Also, I think it's worth pointing out that if this mining theory is true, Javi could be hiding in a mining tunnel, and he could have survived that way.
And the pit could be part of the mine.
Exactly. I think it works for me that, like, and this would be more of the logical explanation versus supernatural, but I do think there's something here. And so I needed to point out this theory. I was like, oh my God, I read this and I was like, oh, okay, you've convinced me.
No, mercury poisoning at all. I'm like, Shauna's baby.
Oh, that's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. No, it's not great. Yeah, but something. There's something there.
Yeah, agreed. It's a very interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Hit me with one of your favorite theories, Marissa.
One theory that I saw was posted by Efficient Pigeon Mel. And she
love
said,
an efficient pigeon.
Or they said, my theory is that Javi is alive and Lottie is going to use this as further proof as there is some supernatural force out there waiting for them.
Interesting.
I thought this was interesting as just like a discussion point. I don't know if I, you know, if Javi's alive and not in Adam's bathroom, which is now where he lives, apparently, you know, I could see Lottie, or at least Lottie, using that fact to get Travis to do something. I don't know if it goes like beyond that.
Yeah, I still think we might not see Javi until the present timeline, but if he survived, I think, like, he has to have either found other people or found somewhere to be safe in those 2 months, and that also has food somewhere. So, like, some other sort of shelter. But certainly, like, that's how Lottie gets Travis on board, is if they find Javi alive. Yeah, I totally see that.
And also, if Javi's alive and he's in the 1996 timeline and he's, like, hiding out in a mineshaft and there's no game, he is killing all the game.
Like, exactly. Yeah, he's learned how to shoot a bow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my other theory that I found, was it, I mentioned it a little bit earlier when I mentioned the cards. It is by Red5525. They have what they call the card deck theory, where they say, what if the deck of cards in the cabin plays some sort of role in the ritualistic hunts / sacrifices that the girls inevitably engage in, like Pit Girl, for example. Mm-hmm. In the opening credits, we see both the Queen of Hearts with the eyes scratched out, alongside a note that says, I am grateful for my friends, as well as someone holding a lighter to the Queen of Diamonds. We also learn in this episode that they use the deck of cards to assign each other specific tasks. Misty was upset she had to go outside again because she drew a 4. What if the girl who draws a certain card is the one who gets hunted down? I'm just spitballing here, but was wondering if anyone else had similar thoughts about the cards being important. In any case, looking forward to upcoming theories. So I was like, I saw this and I was like, I love this because it's in the opening credits. So I feel like they're trying to give us a little breadcrumb, right? Mm-hmm. And just the note of like, oh, Misty drew a 4. She has to go outside. It makes sense to me, especially with the eyes being scratched out. We know eyes are super important on this show, because Thaisa took the eyes out of the doll. Mm-hmm. And we know there's the eyeless man. So like there's also a one-eyed Jack in a deck of cards.
Yep.
So I don't know. There's something here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it came up organically in our discussion of like maybe this is how they're deciding how to do things and goes into the pit girl situation. I know that like just from camping, like there are chores that need to be done. And if I had a deck of cards, this would be an easy way to assign things, you know, to people to get things done. That's kind of like gamifying it in a way.
Yes.
So right now I wonder if it will go, you know, how it will move beyond just chores.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Hit me with your last one, right, Marissa.
The last one is from Possibility, or nice_possibility9502. And they say, I feel like the teen/young woman that Nat stabbed in the hand with the fork might be Lottie's daughter. Don't know why, just feeling it. And I have a bad feeling about who the father might be. Could Lottie and Travis have gotten together after they were rescued? It would hurt Natalie so much to see that Travis had a daughter with Lottie and possibly loved her more than him. Either way, loved her more than him. Yeah. Either way, I feel a love triangle is coming between Nat, Travis, and Lottie. I don't know if it's a love triangle, but I could see it being a power struggle. A
power play. Yeah. Especially like, I think there's something there with like, oh, bringing new life into the world, like, mm-hmm. like in terms of a cult thing. Mm-hmm. I think we could see Lottie and Travis getting closer if they find Javi, like you said before, in terms of him believing and being a follower. I think it's possible. I think sometimes when people, right, the people that join cults are usually the ones who are like more susceptible in terms of they're lost. They need a path. They need to find their way forward. Travis could have gotten to that place where, you know.
Oh, for sure. He's just been in a plane crash. He lost mm-hmm. his brother. Like, what? You know, he's looking for hope. And here Lottie is saying, here's some hope.
Yeah. I don't know that I think this girl is anyone important. I mean, it could be. I thought she was just some rando, but she could be someone who's important.
Yeah, she could be connected in some way. That'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, for that part, I could take it one way or another. But I think, like, the triangle of the three of them is something we're going to see develop for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they certainly they're pitting Nat against Lottie, very like making a point to show that in the very mm-hmm. beginnings of this season.
Yeah.
So, gosh, I love theorizing on this show. If you have theories, send them in. PosherRecaps.com/buzzbuzzbuzz. Hit us up in the Posher Recaps Discord if you're a patron. PosherRecaps.com/Patreon if you would like to become one. Get ad-free versions of all the Yellow Jackets podcasts. We're here to just dive down deep into the rabbit holes and pluck at every little thing every little thread. We're going to try to figure it out. So we'll be here all season long. This was just so enjoyable. I'm so happy for Yellow Jackets to be back. Marissa, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
They can find me right here on Posher Recaps talking about shows like Dear Edward, Daisy Jones and the Six, you, and then I'm also helping out with the Ted Lasso podcast by producing that. So if you have any feedback on that show or the show, I'm happy to handle it for you. And if there's anything else going on, you can catch up with me on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBars. Jess, right. What about you?
My entire world is consumed by two things, Succession and Yellow Jackets. Yay. So that's where you can hear me on Posher Recaps chatting both of those shows every week. If you want to find me on Twitter, I am at @TheJessSterling. Like we said before, if you could leave us a rating, leave us a review. It really helps us get seen in the charts, get higher up there so we could get more listeners, which means more theories, which means more to discuss. So please do that. You could subscribe again, PosherRecaps.com/Yellow Jackets, or just search Yellow Jackets and any podcatcher. We're going to be here every single week breaking down the theories. I am so, so excited. Don't forget, we also have the Early Buzz podcast with Josh Grace and myself coming out on Fridays. And then you can't miss later in the week, Succession versus Yellow Jackets, Cannibal v. Cannibal. It's a dog eat dog world out there. Listen to Josh and LT break down those two shows and put them against each other. And we're going to be back in just one week with episode 2 of Yellow Jackets. So until then, buzz, buzz, buzz.